Guys, I should never, ever, ever look at my phone before I come up to preach. I just got a text. I can get the thing out of my pocket. The text was somebody who... My brother and I are leaving this afternoon for Albania. And, you guys know I like soccer. Have I told you that before? A couple times,
yeah.
There's a soccer game in Europe that my brother and I only dreamed of ever going to. And so we actually booked our flight back a day late in the very off chance that we could go to this soccer game. And then we looked at the price of the tickets, and it was completely impossible to go. Until I just walked up here and somebody just gifted my brother and I two tickets to the game. So, sermon canceled, I just need to go have a party. In Robson Park we had a great time this morning. There were so many good stories. Marion was right, there were lots of stories about the series, but then we had some more stories about what God's been doing in people's lives. And as I'm walking in this morning, Terry took me aside and he just said, "Hey, we've had a great morning already, so glad you're here." It was encouraging. So I want to pray, and then we're going to dive into Matthew chapter 7 this morning and talking about how God sees people. Father, we thank you for your goodness all the time. You're a good, good Father. And we thank you for the ability to raise our hands and to praise you and to be spontaneous. We've been learning about that the last couple weeks. We've also thank you for this series of 9 or 10 weeks where we have been learning what it means to have your heart towards people that don't know you and to have your care and concern and to be able to share the good news of Jesus and his kingdom. Lord, you're good all the time, good circumstances and difficult circumstances. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. And so we're inviting you now, not to be present. We already know that you're present. That's your promise. But that we would be attentive. So help us to be attentive. Not to what I'm saying, but to what you're saying. Lord, we long to have a freedom to be able to share the good news of Jesus in ways in which people respond. And so help us with that this morning. In your name we pray. Amen. There are two kind of people in the world. Heard that statement before? In so many different ways, right? We've got some pictures. John, you got these pictures for us? Let's see if we can see those. Okay, you have to tell me whether you're left side or right side. All right, which one are you? Left or right? Some you set the alarm and away they go. Okay, next one. Left or right on this one? Some fill out all the blanks, some get them, some scratch it out. Forget that one. Okay, next one. Yeah, this one's a little more complicated. I can tell you which one I am, and I can tell you which one Shelly is. Dan, which one are you?
It really depends on the mood.
All right, so you could be a little bit of each. All right, okay, I think we got another one or two. What do we got? Yeah, this one, yeah, left or right? Not that big of a deal, maybe. Next one? Okay, this one I definitely know which one I am. I do not like red letters on my phone. We cannot have red numbers on the phone. All right, I think there's one more. Oh, boy. All right. I don't get that one. What's that one? Just a digital and a... Oh. All kinds of different things there. Well, we get the idea. There's two kinds of people. Thanks, John. Jesus said there's two kinds of people, too. In fact, he gave us three more pictures, and I want to read the text for us. I know that Craig's already read a little bit of it, but come with me to Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 to 28. And Jesus gives us three more pictures of two kinds of people. See if you can hear them as I read the text for us, all right? Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 to 28. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction. Many enter through it, But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down, thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit you will recognize them. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? In your name drive out demons, and in your name perform miracles. Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew, beat against that house. Yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house. It fell with a great crash. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority, not as their teachers of the law. Three pictures, two kinds of people. Here's the first. Verses 13 and 14. Jesus says that there's a narrow gate and a wide gate. Some walk through the wide gate, some walk through the narrow. We have to make a decision. Which one will we walk through? For the wide gate leaves us options. The narrow gate makes us choose for one and against others. Can I give you an example of what I mean? It's almost 30 years ago, next month in fact, that I made a decision for Shelley and against every other woman in the world. Now, I wasn't against them as people, but I was for them being my wife. We made a decision. There were no more options. It wasn't like going shopping in a shopping mall where I looked in one store, looked in another store, and I kept my options open and I could return things and get a refund. It wasn't like any of that. I made a decision for her and against others. And Jesus says, that's the kind of decision that I'm looking for. But it's not just a decision, he says, not just a decision about which gate, but it's also the direction that you're headed or which path that leads to the gate. So he says, I want you to go down the path that leads to the narrow gate instead of going down the road that leads to the wide gate. Now you and I think, okay, what is he talking about? It's a bit of a metaphor, we get it. But if you're a Jew and you're listening to the voice of Jesus, it was clear. Jews would be going to Jerusalem to go to the temple, and there would be different gates in the wall of the city to be able to go in. And a Jew listening to Jesus that day would know full well what he means. Don't go on the wide road that goes through the big wide gate, because then there's all kinds of vendors along the road. Somebody's selling figs, somebody's selling wine, somebody's selling meat over here. And what happens is instead of being able to go and focus on why you're there, you get distracted by all the things that are going on, keeping your options open. Jesus says, no, if you want to make a decision to go through the narrow gate, you have to go in the direction the narrow path. In other words, he's saying, if you want to follow me, it's costly. He also talks about the destination. For those that go through the wide gate, on the wide path, it leads to destruction. But those of you who are disciplined and go through the narrow gate from the narrow path, it leads to life. Jesus says there's two kinds of people. Those that go through the narrow gate, those that go through the wide gate. It's not a both and. It's an either or. But then he gives us another picture going on in verses 15 all the way down to 23. He talks about these trees and good fruit and bad fruit. We get it. But then we come to verse 21 and he actually explains it. He dives a little deeper. For you and I, when we look at other people, we're able to tell pretty quickly, that guy produces good fruit. Not so good fruit over there. Good fruit, not good fruit. We're quick. We're good at it. We're able to judge others in a hurry. But what about ourselves? And Jesus says, I'm more concerned that you look in the mirror and figure it out for who you are. What kind of person are you? Do you bear good fruit or bad fruit? And he says, here's one of the ways that we can tell if we're being delusional or rationalizing. Verse 21, it says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. Well, who's going to say, Lord, Lord? And one of the commentators makes a comment this way. He says, you know, sometimes people are delusional because they think they're religious. They've got all their doctrine organized. Lord, Lord, you know, I'm pretty smart when it comes to doctrinal stuff. Dotted my I's, crossed my T's. I can win all kinds of arguments when it comes to debating issues of religion. Jesus says, yeah, but do you actually put it into practice, what I'm asking you to do? For Jesus wants us to move from doctrine to being obedient. And then he says there's another kind of person who is delusional or fools themselves. Those that are enthusiastic. They're over the top with happy talk. Lord, Lord. There's no reason to say it twice. Say it once. Sometimes people are not just religious, but they're over-the-top enthusiastic. They're talking about things as if somehow, if I talk about it in such a positive way, you'll believe that I know more about it than I do, or that I'm more engaged in it than I am. I was trying to remember, it's driving me a bit crazy, but I had a conversation years ago with somebody about, you ready for this, contraception. I have no idea why we were talking about contraception. I have no idea the context. I just remember the conversation because it was hilarious. And we're debating. I don't even know why we would do this, but we're debating different methods of contraception. He said this. I probably countered with that. He went back to his argument, and he was adamant. He was talking like, just, this is the best, this is the best, this is the best. And somehow, out of the blue, I just had this smirk on my face, and I said, how many kids do you have? He said, 8. He said, I rest my case. Sometimes we talk about stuff so much like we know more. And yet, when we actually look at the reality, there's not as much substance there. Jesus says, you're not impressing me by being religious, nor are you impressing me with happy talk. He comes to a third way where delusionally he says, nor is my Father impressed with all the works that you do. Look at verse 22. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name drive out demons, in your name perform many miracles? Didn't I go to mission group every Wednesday night? Haven't I tithed faithfully? Didn't I show up at weekends of prayer and Tim classes? Didn't I do all those things? And he says, my Father is far more interested in a relationship with you. He wants you to know that he's present. Friends, we move from doctrine to obedience. We move from being enthusiastic to being faithful. We move from works to learning to love those that he loves. That's what he's interested in. Two kinds of people, bad fruit and good fruit. Then he comes to this third picture, and we'll spend the rest of the morning on this third picture, where he talks about two kinds of people, or two kinds of builders, those who are foolish and those who are wise, just in these last five verses. There's a number of things that if you go underneath the surface of these verses, if you poke at them, you'll begin to discover some lessons that are learned here about how construction is done, or at least from a spiritual perspective. Here's a couple of observations we can make from these verses. First of all, Jesus warns about those who are pseudo-spiritual. Oh, they give an appearance that they're spiritual, but they're not really. So, for instance, the difference between the wise and the foolish builder in terms of the house, there's no difference. There's no difference. There is in the foundation, and we'll come to that in a minute. But it's the same house, same kind of people. And sometimes we read this text, and others like it, and, well, let me do it in this way. Let me ask you a question. Don't answer it out loud. When you read these verses about a wise and foolish builder, typically what we do as human beings is we put ourselves in the story. Which one are you? the wise one or the foolish one? I promise you that about 98% of us think we're the wise one. We're kind of wise, we got it together. Not like those people down the road, right? Those people, they don't know what they're doing. Or we do the in and out, or we do the us and them. And we begin to say, well, it's, you know, we're Christians and they're not Christians. So we're kind of the wise ones and they're the foolish ones. Here's the problem. That's not what Jesus is doing. He's actually talking to all of those who think they are following him. He's not talking about non-Christians. He's talking to Christians. And he's saying, some of you Christians are wise. But some of you are foolish because you're only playing games. Pseudo-spiritual. You've been lulled to sleep. Here's the second thing he says, or that we can learn. Obedience is not optional. How many times have I done this, where we take things like the Sermon on the Mount and we rationalize it? Turn the other cheek? Well, yeah, but you didn't know about how mean he was to me. Pray for your enemies? Yeah, but God, if you knew the circumstances, you would know that. And on and on and on down the line. We rationalize, friends. I rationalize. I did it this morning already. Had to come to grips with, I'm preaching on this, and yet there was something inside of me that just wanted to respond badly to something. And Jesus says, yes, okay, salvation is through faith, but obedience is not optional. Here's another one. You read these verses and you see that it rains. But sometimes we think that as Christians, it's not going to rain on us. It's going to be sunny here. But oh yeah, on those non-Christians, it's going to rain, right? Friends, it rains on both houses. Rain happens. Rain, of course, here in this text means tough stuff. We've been sold a bill of goods when we hear that Christianity makes life easier. No, it doesn't. It's just that those that are wise have planned for the rainy days. Same thing with the wind. The wind comes up. This is a metaphor for spiritual battles, spiritual difficulties that we go through. It happens to all of us. It's just those that are wise have made provisions. I was with somebody this morning at Robson Park. It doesn't matter the name. This was such a beautiful moment. For she walked in and I could see that there was pain in her, and I asked her a question and she said, you know, I have this illness, I have this problem, but I don't blame God. I said, really? Why? She says, because tough stuff happens to all of us and there's spiritual battles and it's not God's fault. And I went, you know, name, that's exactly what we're talking this morning about. That's what's in this text. The issue is not whether it'll rain, not whether the wind comes up, but we blame God as if somehow God's supposed to make it better for us because we're following him. When in reality, the issue is not God, it's us. And it's the foundation that we've laid. And so sometimes the wind comes up, the rain comes up, all these stuff happens. And really all we need to face is the fact that our house is shaky. It's leaking. The wind's rattling the windows because our foundation is poor. Let me spend the last couple of minutes talking about a couple things around building a good foundation. Friends, if we don't hear anything in the whole 10 weeks of this series, these next couple minutes may be the most important. How do we build a solid foundation so that when all the tough times come, we can follow him in the midst of all of that? Any of you lived in Winnipeg before? Nobody lived in Winnipeg. Let me tell you about Winnipeg. I grew up in Winnipeg. There's a bunch of people in Robson Park that lived in Winnipeg. They knew what I was talking about. In Winnipeg, there are different parts of the city, like there are here in Vancouver, and different house prices in different parts of the city. And this is going back a ways. We lived out in the suburbs for a while as a family growing up. And my parents wanted to move closer to downtown, where the church building was that we were participants in. So we moved from out here to down there. Now the problem is that the houses out here were cheaper than the ones that were down here. And so as we moved down here, I knew my parents were struggling to sort of say, how do we afford to live in this area? One of the things that happened in this new area was houses, well, they used a euphemism or a word in Winnipeg that was kind of a rationalization. They said, houses settled. Now, do you know what they meant by houses settled? It means that the ground sank and the house tilted at an angle. So you can imagine how many people wanted to buy a home where it was tilted. Like, who wants to buy a tilted house? The foundation would either crack or it would sink, and it was tilted. So we could go, we bought a house, a tilted house, because I knew that that was the one that my parents could afford. And you could go into the living room at one end of the house, put a marble down. And as you put this marble down, you would see this thing start to roll all the way down the hall. And I tell you, by the time it got to the other side of the house, it was like flying. It was going fast. That meant that the tilt was like extreme. Now, there's two ways to fix a settled house. One is you go underneath and you crank up the foundation and you build it up. The other, a little cheaper, the way my dad chose, is that you level the floors. Now, so we went in one summer and we leveled the floors so that the marble wouldn't roll all the way down, right? Just don't look at the ceiling, because the ceiling, of course, is slanted too. So it would be 8 foot at one part and about 7-8 at the other part. But we went into this home, and this home had settled, and we tried to fix it up as best as we can. Why am I telling you this? Because Jesus says there are some that build their house on the sand, and it settles, and storms come, and it just makes a mess of the foundation. There are others that build it on the rock, and they don't have to worry about leveling the floors or fixing the ceiling or doing any of that stuff. And so the question for us is, how in the world, if our foundation's a mess, do we fix it? Let me give you a couple things that I think are helpful. I am concerned that one of the things that's happening in Christianity today is that our foundation is not what it needs to be. So let's look at a couple things. One is about how we make decisions. So one of the books that I read when I was about 18 was called The Christian Response. And Pete, this Christian Response talked about this reality that said, you make decisions either from a physical standpoint, emotional standpoint, or a spiritual standpoint. If you make them from a physical or an emotional standpoint, you might be building your house on the sand. If you make it from a spiritual standpoint, it's solid rock. Let me give you some examples. Don't it? You know that. I need to decide whether I'm going to eat this donut. Now, if I think, wow, that looks pretty good. I know how tasty they are. So I make a physical decision that I'm going to eat that donut. Now, I know there's holes in this. You could say, well, what if you haven't eaten for like 6 weeks or something? You probably, that's a good decision to eat the donut. But most of you probably know that it's not a really good physical decision to eat the donut. How many calories are in one of these things? Anybody know? Lewis, how many calories are in here? 160. Lewis, I think it's even more than that. I think there's 160 in that piece of donut.
Wow.
Right? It's like there's a lot of calories in the donut. So I probably shouldn't eat the donut. I should probably eat like a, like a kale and quinoa salad that you like? Something disgusting like that. I should probably eat one of those, right? Physically, or you know what happens. Or emotionally, I could make a decision to eat the donut, right? Emotionally, I've had a long day, it's a hard day, I just feel like, man, it just feels so good to eat the donut, right? Okay, you know what happens when I live my life like that. I make decisions based on physical or emotional, and it's just like building your house on the sand. But I can actually make a spiritual decision that says, well, I'm okay, I can eat the donut or not eat the donut, it's not a big deal, I have control over it, not it over me. Melissa, you could probably afford to eat this donut, so you're very welcome to the donut after if you'd like. Let's give a different example, not just donuts.
How about this one?
How about our speech? If I make a decision on what I'm going to say from a physical standpoint, I sometimes say things that I shouldn't say. I say things that come to my mind, I say what I want, or if I say it from an emotional standpoint, sometimes I say it without thinking, I just sort of, something happens and I respond. But if I make a decision that I'm going to only have come out of my mouth that which is spiritual, I speak the truth and that which is upbuilding. And so there are times when I curb my tongue. Or, how about our spending? How do we make decisions on our spending? Sometimes we might say, well, physically, I can actually afford. I've got the money in the bank. I can do it. No problem. That doesn't mean that we should. Or other times we make decisions on our spending based on our emotions, spontaneous. We see something. I want that. I want to buy that. My neighbor has it, so why can't I have it? But when we make spiritual decisions on our spending, we check with the Lord. Lord, this is your money. How do you want me to use it? Is this wise? I know I can afford it. I know it looks nice and feels nice, but maybe sometimes I have to deny myself. Same thing with sex. Physically, I make decisions that feels good. Emotionally, I make decisions that provide security. But if I make spiritual decisions, I decide that sex is going to be kept within the bounds of a marriage between one man and one woman to bear witness to who God is. You get the idea. Friends, laying a foundation means we make spiritual decisions instead of physical or emotional. The physical and the emotional come into it, but they're not where we begin. Here's another one. It's not just about the right order or the right materials. It's about the right process. Friends, so often we're tempted to take shortcuts, but laying a proper foundation is not about shortcuts. It's about the reality that we need to continue to be to bear witness, to run the race over time, to be patient. Foolish builders take shortcuts, like I did in building a back fence years ago. Shelley and I moved into our home, we needed a back fence, so I had somebody come and they said, oh yeah, as long as you put the fence post down about 16, 18 inches, you should be fine. Well, you know what happened after about 2 years? You know what my fence looked like? The wind would come and it would blow that way, and it was all over the place. So what did I do? I had to get Mark to come. And I remember Mark came and he said, well, yeah, your fence posts are only down 16 to 18 inches. They really need to be down 2 feet. So what did Mark do? He did all the hard work of digging down and down and down and putting them in properly. Guess what my fence looks like now? It's straight, and the wind comes and it doesn't move. Why? Because we did what needed to be done. We went down and built the proper foundation. It's the same thing with us spiritually. And maybe it's about learning. Friends, we come to the scriptures and we have to apply ourselves to these. We have to read, not so that we've got facts stuck in our head, but so that God reveals himself to who we are. So we study and we apply it. We come to sermons. Please, don't ever for a second think that your life, I don't think for a second, your life is changed by listening to one of my sermons. But over a couple of years, you take notes on what God's saying, you pay attention, I guarantee your life has changed. You come one Sunday and I know you're not going to go away thinking, oh, my life has totally changed now that I listen to Cam for 30 minutes. But you come for a couple of years and you listen to the Lord and you watch what happens. We need to apply ourselves. But it's not just about learning from the scriptures. It's also about prayer. How many times do we try to shortcut? We come to the Lord with to-do lists. Hey, God, could you fix that? Could you deal with that? I really need some help in this area. And we go through those to-do lists, and they're not all bad, but that's not the point of prayer. The point of prayer is that we meet with him and we find him and we come into his presence. And so instead of doing it my way, God, here's the way I think life should be. Could you sort of put everything in order? We end up being changed and we do it his way. We learn from the scriptures. We listen to God in prayer. And there's a foundation that doesn't just go 18 inches deep. It goes all the way down and is firmly founded upon who He is. Jesus says there's two kinds of people. Those that go to the wide gates and get distracted, or those that bear bad fruit even though they think that they're religious, or those that build and take shortcuts and build foundations on sand instead of realizing it, they're in for the long haul. And that if they come to Him, both in the text, through community, as Terry said earlier, and through prayer, He'll be laying a foundation for them that will never fail. We need to quit. We're going to come to the communion table. And here's how I'd like it to happen today. I'd like you to each take this little cup of sand, which in a way is a confession that so often we build our lives on the sand. We make decisions not in the best way. We try to take shortcuts on scripture or prayer. I'd like you to take this sand, and as we begin to listen to Craig and the team play in a minute, take a minute at your seat and confess those things to the Lord. And particularly confess them around the whole issue of sharing your faith. Then what I want you to do is, when you're ready, take your cup of sand and go over to the cross. I know there's not a lot of area there, but so we'll have to time this out. Leave your cup of sand at the cross. For Jesus died so that we would stop building our lives on sand, but on a rock. Now I want you to take a rock, exchange it. Take the rock and take the Sharpie and write the name of a friend who does not know Jesus on that rock. Then come back to the table. And when you're at the table, you grab a great big piece of bread. This is the grace of God that's been given, that's invited us to become part of His body. And pray and thank the Lord that you're included. And pray and ask the Lord that He would include the name of the friend who you've written on the rock. And take the cup and drink it. And remember, this is the sign of His forgiveness for us. Not just for us, but for the names of the friends we've written on the rock. And pray that somehow, a year from now, 6 months from now, that we will come to the table and you will be standing next to the person whose name you've written on this rock. Sand exchanged for rock, name on rock, come to the table, bread, cup, go anywhere in the room that you want. The band will be playing, we'll hear the music, we can sing with the music. We'll take communion on our own today, and at the end of that, we'll move to a close. All right?